we know what tassels are. In fact, I have a bunch of them on this stole. I notice there's five on each end of the stole, and then there's one in the back. 11 tassels. Well, what's a tassel? Well, it's just a decoration. It doesn't have any purpose. It's ornamental. It's insignificant. Now, it was given significance in the Jewish tradition because God told the Jews to put tassels on the corners of their prayer shawl, the garment that they used to signify that they were Jews, that they belonged to the God of Israel. So they had four tassels. So it had significance because God gave it significance. God said, well, these tassels will remind you to obey the commandments, to be faithful to the covenant. If you remember when Jesus was correcting the Pharisees, he said the Pharisees, they make huge tassels on, they wear huge tassels as if that was going to show everyone that they're holier than everybody else. The point being, larger tassels don't make anybody better than anyone else. And that's not a proof nor a cause of holiness. It's just a decoration. Now, in today's gospel, we see Jesus, again, attracting huge numbers of people, curing countless sick people. And at the end of the passage, the people have come to realize that this man Jesus is so powerful that he doesn't even have to do anything. If people can just touch the tassel on his cloak, they'll be healed. And that's what it says. If they begged him that they might touch only the tassel on his cloak, the most insignificant corner, the decoration, the ornament. If they could just touch the tassel on his cloak, and as many as touched it were healed. This conveys the extraordinary power that just flows out of Jesus, out of the threads of his clothing. And you know the story of the woman with the hemorrhage, who perhaps she heard about this, or perhaps she experienced it first and the word got around that his tassel had power, because she snuck up behind Jesus and touched the tassel, and she was healed. Extraordinary power. Now, we know from the Gospels that Jesus was extraordinarily powerful as a healer and as an exorcist and as a teacher. He was awakening the people to something new, a new creation, a new beginning, a new law, a new covenant, a new presence of God in the world, because Jesus is God and the power that he displays is divine power. That's why he can walk on water and multiply loaves and raise the dead and heal the sick and drive out demons, because he's God. It's easy for God to do these things. He has absolute power. That's what we know about God. He is the absolute, he is the supreme being. Now, the Jews knew there was a supreme being. They honored God. The surprise was that God would make himself present in his own creation, that he would become a creature among creatures. That was the shock, too much to take. But it's the truth. It's the truth. Jesus is God made man. Well, the first reading is the beginning of the whole Bible, the beginning of the first book, Genesis, and it is the story of creation. God, the Creator, determining how he wants things to come into being. It's a very beautiful passage, one of the most fundamental stories that tells us who God is and how he works. His power is absolute. He decides, he speaks, he does it, it happens. There's something very simple about the story of creation. It's orderly, it's calm, it's majestic. It's a king deciding how he wants his kingdom to run. People sometimes get disturbed that it happened in 6 days. We don't have to take the days as 24-hour periods. The atheists and the skeptics like to complain, saying, how can there be the first day, the second day, the third day, when the sun and the moon weren't even created until the fourth day? So how can there be a first day, second day? That's taking things too literally. The point here is that God has absolute power, and he determines exactly how things are going to be. This story of creation, which is a revelation of divine power, his creative power, stands in very sharp contrast to all the other stories of creation. I'm talking about other religions and cultures. Pretty much every culture has some account of how things came to be the way they are. And they are usually stories of some kind of chaos or catastrophe or conflict. There's a huge monster that gets cut in half, and one half becomes the sea and one half becomes the land, that sort of thing. There's lots of stories like this. Every tribe and every pagan religion has some kind of a creation account. And they're full of conflict and strife. Which of the gods is going to be the dominant one? Which one is going to determine who rules the sky, who rules the daytime? So the sun and the moon are in constant battle, and the sun is winning during the day, and when the sun gets tired and goes to bed, well, then the moon takes over and rules the night until the sun wakes up and says, you get out of here. That's the kind of stories those creation stories are. The sea and the land are always fighting against each other, and the sea will pour water onto the land, and then the land will push the sea back. Conflict, tension. And this is built into a number of world religions. You know, the yin and yang, the darkness and light, constant tension. And a lot of people think that's the way it is, that we just live in this constant battle between darkness and light. Of course there's a battle between darkness and light because of the fall. Evil powers do oppose God. But that conflict is not in the root of creation. That comes after creation. Creation is determined with great, peaceful, orderly, calm power. And this is the God whom we know. He creates, and what he creates is good. It's so simple. It's the beauty of it is so simple. What about the sun and the moon? What about the gods of the stars and the god of the sea? Well, the sun is just an ornament. Most religions worship the sun, and most pagan religions think of the sun as a powerful god. To God, the true God, the sun is a tassel. It's just a bigger tassel. That's all it is. He just put it up there like we put pictures on a wall. It's an ornament. Everything in creation is just, in the hands of God, something that he puts in out of his own sense of what will make things beautiful. It's a beautiful way to think about creation and to appreciate the beauty of creation. God makes things beautiful and orderly. And he expects us to do the same. You know, when we put things in order in our lives, when we make our bed, when we straighten up the kitchen, or we put pictures on the wall, we're actually participating in a very small way in the orderliness of our Creator. He likes things to be put in order. Of course, things fall into disorder all the time, and we ourselves have a lot of disorder. We'll be hearing about that in a couple of days, about how creation was distorted by sin. But the foundation is order. Peaceful, serene, beautiful order. When Jesus, now that's the foundation. When Jesus comes into the world, he manifests the power that puts things in order. The power that separates light from darkness. Jesus does this. He separates the evil spirits from the people. He drives sickness away. In fact, it comes naturally to him. That's why it just flows out of the tassels, because he's God. And God is a God who puts things in order. We know the story gets complicated, and we will be reflecting on that this year. But for now, let's simply rejoice in the very basic truth of God, the Creator, the good Creator, who makes everything good, who delights in what he has created. This is what the psalm says: may the Lord be glad in his works. He is glad in his works because he made them good. We also should be glad in the works of the Lord.